I take one day and I will schedule out tweets for an entire month.
Hello, welcome back to Press Start, how to become a game developer. My name is Adam Arisasmita, CEO of Arsenesia and Vice President of Association Game Indonesia. I'm going to be your host for this episode. So as usual, in Press Start, we're going to talk about the game industry, how to jump into the game industry, about the game development and start your career. So we are going to invite expert and all of the industry players to share their story, their insight, their journey into the position that they are now. So I hope this podcast can help you start to be a game developers. All right, so stay tuned because we will have new episode every Monday. So make sure you put on some notification and some reminder. And of course, this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. And today we have a very, very special guest, and I think we will learn a lot from her journey. So we're going to invite Sel into the stage. Hello, Sel.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm great. So, by the way, in which country are you in right now?
I'm currently located in the USA, in the United States.
Oh, all right. So I think the time difference is almost like 12 hours. What time is it right now in your location?
It's currently 10 a.m. for me.
Oh, it's 9 p.m. for me. So yeah, it's literally on the other side of the globe. All right. So before we start, Sel, maybe could you give us a little bit introduction about what you do every day?
Yeah. So for those who don't know, my name is Sel. I'm a community manager and director and an events manager. And what I do every day is I essentially form, create, and maintain communities for indie developers in different games, being indie or AAA. And on top of that, I also host events, which can go from anywhere from streams to giveaways and all those sorts of things that keep the community engaged and coming back for more.
I see. Wow, this is going to be interesting episode because I'm not sure in Indonesia the role as a community manager is quite common and what is the impact of the community into the game. And I think we're going to learn a lot from this session. But before we start, Sel, usually we have some trivial question that we want to ask to our guests, but you don't have to worry. There is no right or wrong. It's not a test. So it's just some trivial question. All right. Okay. So, Sel, for the first question, my question is, do you still remember what is the first game that you played?
Oh, that's an easy one.
I thought. All right.
That's a great question. Easy question. The first ever game that I ever played was on the Sega Genesis, and it was the very first Sonic the Hedgehog game. And that game was introduced to me by my mother, who was a very big video game fanatic. And that was the first game that she's ever put in my hands, I believe around the age of like 3 or 4 years old. So ever since, that was like my beginning journey of playing video games.
I see. So, wow, this is quite interesting. So you have gaming vibe in your family, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I see. Because in a lot of other condition, like a lot of parents really discourage children to play game, right? Because it can make you lazy, stupid, or anything. But in your case, you have a family that encourage you to play video games?
Oh, absolutely. I come from a background where creativity is a top priority. Through that, we like to explore it through video games. So like I said, one of the first games I ever played was Sonic the Hedgehog. My mother grew up playing games. It was her thing, from the original Donkey Kong to Pong and everything else like that. And then even going forward, like now she's like really, she got really into Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and all that good stuff. And then that just trickled down throughout me and my siblings, from the kids who like to play Fortnite to those who like to play like the horror games like Five Nights at Freddy's and such. It definitely is something that's like a core vital part of my family.
Wow, that's really amazing. Do you in your family, like your parents has restriction, like the rule, like this is the time that you need to study, do your homework, and this is the time to play game, or they just give you freedom if you want to play game anytime?
There's definitely the restrictions of making sure you get your work done before you go and have fun, or at the very least, if you have your fun, limit it so you can make sure you get your work done ahead of time. Because even though we keep creativity as like a forefront of being able to express yourself and have fun, because that's one of the best ways for us to learn, we also want to make sure that your education is still a huge priority as well, because that's how you get forward in life, you know? So for us, we tried to essentially gamify how we learn and how we did things.
Wow.
And that was one of the many perks of having like a very big gamer household, is teaching us how we can, do our studies, but making it to fun, almost sometimes competitive ways. At the same time as well. So yeah, education definitely came above playing the games. But if it was like an educational game, then we were allowed to do that maybe for like a little like leeway of studying time if it was, attached to a subject we were learning at the time.
Wow, that's really interesting. Wow, amazing, amazing. So your first game is Sonic. You're playing in Sega when you were three years old, right?
Yeah.
All right, so... Wow, this is amazing. So for the next question, if the first question is the first game that you play, the second question is the last game that you play before this recording session. What games did you play?
Ooh, that's a good question. What did I play recently? I didn't play any games yesterday. I've really gotten into mobile games because they're very portable. And I've been playing this one game that's called Cells, which is kind of like this evolution game where it takes you all through like evolution of just like everything, like evolution of like the solar system, evolution of people, evolution of like animals and such. And it's really cool. So I've been kind of interested in that. But as far as like any of like the recent games that I've been playing on PC, I think the last one I've been playing was Power Wash Simulator, because it's very relaxing.
All right.
It's just something that I can just zone out to, put my music on, and it's just kind of like a very peaceful game that allows, it doesn't make me overthink or stress about what I'm doing. I'm just zoned out, having a good time.
Ah, that's interesting. Do you have any kind of like specific genre that you like to play, or you like every kind of game? You like every game?
Ooh, so I am really, really big on games that either make me think, or games that make me relax, or simulator type of games. So games that make me think, like I love the Fire Emblem series. I love the Ace Attorney series. Like I love having to think about like every move that I have to take, or thinking about like what evidence that I collect in order to get to the right solutions. Or games that, like I said, like Power Wash Simulator, or even House Flipper, like those kind of like very tranquil games. And then as far as simulator games, like I love Animal Crossing, love Stardew Valley. I love farming type games, and where I can be able to put myself inside the game, create my own avatar, and do all those kinds of things. So I would say that those are my top three types of games. Very like strategy games, casual games, and then simulators.
Yes, yes. Hi, Animal Crossing is a very, very good game. It looks simple. I mean, like for someone who haven't played, it looks like you just manage the character and build something. But inside, it's a lot of complex things happening right in the game.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You would think that it's like, oh, it's just so cute and simple. And then next thing you know, you have hundreds of hours in the game of just like, these islands are not perfect yet. I need to redo everything. So it's definitely like, if you're the kind of person who enjoys like, like interior and outerior design kind of stuff, that's definitely a game for you, because it'll definitely get your gears grinding and rolling for all these different new kinds of ideas. And it's really cool to see what the rest of the community does when they play these games as well. It fuels you with so much inspiration. It's like, man, I like this idea. I'm going to take this idea and this idea and this idea, and I want to mesh it into my own and create my own little thing. So that's always really fun.
Yes, yes. Agree with you. Agree with you. All right. All right. Okay. That's the game that you play. The next question is for yourself. Besides playing a video game, what is the kind of entertainment or hobby that you do besides playing games?
Ooh, that's good. That's good. So I'm a big person on like watching like comedy skits and shows. Those are very entertaining for me. I love having myself a good laugh. Outside of that, I love working with my hands. I enjoy needle felting. Mm-hmm. I'm being taught how to crochet. I love doing photography. I have a perfect model who is my cat. besides that, I do also take pictures with people here and there. Like, people will be like, hey, I got this grant, like this great outfit. I would love to do a shoot. And I'm like, absolutely. Let's set a date and time. And I love doing things like that. But above all of that, I love to cook and bake. I love being in the kitchen and just like whipping up something new or trying a recipe that I just recently found. As someone who has come from a household where while gaming was a big priority, cooking was also a really big priority as my parents were like professional chefs. So seeing being around that all the time, like naturally I do it too. So I'm constantly just, you know, like in the kitchen figuring out like, what do I have in the fridge and how can I mix and mash that together in a different way besides like the basic, I don't know, it's just going to be a sandwich, I guess. Let's make it more than that. Let's make it a toasted sandwich with these kinds of sauces on it and things like that. And same with baking. I really love figuring out different ways to make something appeal to my personal taste buds and the people around me because I love to share it as well at the end of the day.
Wow. That's really interesting. Wow, that's a quite interesting hobbies, baking and cooking. And it's surprising that you have a family that professional chef, your dad or your mom?
My mom.
Ah, wow. And she plays video games too, right?
Oh, absolutely. This woman, oh gosh. When it comes to my mother in video games, no one can stop her from her gaming time. It's just like all the chores are done, all the kids are cared for, everyone's good and great. You guys are off playing your games, I'm going to be off playing my games. And usually she's off playing Street Fighter, or she's playing a Mario game, she's playing like a Sonic game, like an older one though. Or she's finding some like random simulation game, like, you know, like Farm Life or something. She can play those games at times. But yeah, definitely. Wow. Definitely. She is a huge inspiration for a lot of what I do in my life now.
Wow. Like in your daily activity in your home back then, or maybe now, like every single person has their own console or something like that so they can play, or like they have like scheduled, this is my time to use the TVs. And then after then you are. How usually you manage that?
So back then, when I was younger, it was definitely a lot of like sharing the consoles, which then brought for us to have like games that were allowed to be multiplayer, so multiple people can play at once. So playing games like Mario Party or Mario Kart, playing Sonic on like split screens and such like that, playing like Crash Bandicoot where you can play as two players at the same time. So it was definitely a sharing situation back then. Now it's a little different. Well, one, I'm grown now, so I have my own home. I have my own space where I can have my own systems and such. The only person I really share them with at times is my partner. But even then, we have like our own Nintendo Switches, and I think we only really share like the Xbox and such. But when I do go and visit home, like, you know, there are now three different like TV locations. So there is one in my mom's room, which is her unit. Like, that's her space.
All right.
And then there's the one that is in one of the kids' bedrooms, and then there's one in the living room. So that way everyone can kind of, you know, like switch out here and there. It's like, okay, like mom's in her room playing her games. Some of the kids are downstairs in the living room, and like probably a couple of them are in the bedroom playing games. So it definitely helps to make sure people aren't fighting of like, oh, I don't want to play this today though. I want to play this. And it's just like, well, I don't want to play that. I want to play this. So having that separation has helped out tremendously.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, to have the kind of situation in your family where game is become part of like the family. I think a lot of children's gonna envy you because you have that kind of situation. All right. Okay, last question for you before we start discussion. Do you remember like what is your dream job as a kid?
My dream job as a kid, I believe one of my dream jobs was like, I think I wanted to kind of be an actor. I loved seeing the people on screen, and from a young age, I always knew it was acting. I knew it wasn't exactly real, how they were acting, because I would see one person play a role in like three different shows, and I'm just like, I thought your name was oh, and then that's when I was taught about acting. Since then, you know, like here and there, like, you know, like I did a little bit of theater. I did a little bit of this here and there. I realized that, you know, like I tend to sometimes get a little bit of social anxiety. So I was like, you know, right, maybe acting isn't fully for me. And that's when I started really leaning heavy more into like art and game development over the years.
I see. Wow, that's interesting. So this is going to jump into the main discussion of our session, like the journey that you, your journey into the game industry, right? So we would like to know about how you start your career. So maybe all of the listener or the one who watch in the YouTube or listen in the podcast can maybe get some inspiration for their career, or maybe they can get more insight about all kind of role in the game industry. So for starters, Sal, do you remember when was the first time that you want to work in the game industry, and what was the trigger?
Yeah, so for me, what really made me realize that I wanted to work in the game industry is when I was in college. And that was around like the beginnings, like freshman year or maybe even sophomore year of college. And that was after I realized I don't necessarily want to be in the animation field. So I started in college, and it was when we started doing like our first ever like games making class, and it filled me with such like a certain type of joy of like being able to build and create the game. And as someone who's constantly playing them, I love playing them. I enjoyed it so much. But after I started to make it, I said, Oh, I want to keep doing this. And I wasn't necessarily sure, as like, you know, like, do I necessarily want to do the technical side? Do I want to do the artsy side or things like that? But definitely, I want to say around like 2015, 2016 is what started me feeling like, yeah, game development is the way to go.
I see. So there's a lot of roles like in the game industry, like the one who create the assets, the artist, the one who code, the programmers, and there's also one who design the game, the one who manage the community, the marketing and everything. Did you already knew back then that there's a lot of type of roles in the game industry, and this is the one that you choose, or how do you go to the role that you are right now?
Yeah, so originally I did not ever think that I would become a community manager, because like, I didn't even know that that was a thing. I knew about some of the many roles from like, you know, like storyboard artists, 3D riggers, everything else like that, and et cetera. And originally I had started out with wanting to be a narrative designer. I really enjoyed games such as visual novels and such around that time. And I loved writing. I still do love writing. For many years I started off like doing like the visual novel stuff and working on narrative design, writing out like, you know, like story quests and things like that along the way, writing scripts for NPCs and all of that. And it wasn't until I want to say 2019 that I recognized what the community manager role was, and then realizing, wow, I've actually been doing community management for years, and I had no idea that was actually a career choice.
All right.
So it was, I want to say that, yeah, it's from 2015, 2016, all the way up to 2018, early 2019, it was a lot of narrative design. But in 2019, but especially in 2020, is when I really started to pick up on doing community management.
I see. When you were in college, what kind of study did you take? Animation or?
Yeah, in college, it is a joint major, which is called animation and game arts, where we learn the ins and outs of animation and gaming from both a 2D and 3D scale. So we got a little taste of like both sides in two different formats.
I see. And what made you choose that study? I mean, do you want to be the animator, or you have already have interest in game industry that's why you took that class?
Yeah, definitely. So originally, like I said, I wanted to go in for animation, but I also really loved games at the same time. So I kind of saw it as a best of both worlds at the time and said, yeah, I can get two in one. I want that. So that's definitely why I went for that one. Absolutely.
I see. So when you were in college, you built your skill around animation, around game development, right? And when you graduate, did you the first place that you work, is it a game company or animation company or not related to game at all?
So technically neither. My first job was actually working with a board game company as one of their motion designers. So I started off with a board game company and I was doing like their graphics and stuff here where I live in the US. And then I also worked in a library kind of teaching students about animation and game arts. So not necessarily with any kind of like studio or such, but still working in that field essentially by giving my resources and my knowledge to kids who were also looking forward to doing those things, but then also doing, you know, like some actual motion graphic type work for a board game company. So not, it's not digital, but I mean, a game is still a game. So
that's correct. When you were doing your first job, what kind of skills that you use? I mean, in creating the motion, there's something like that. Do you learn, do you use the skill like drawing, painting, or something like that?
Yeah, so when I was doing motion design, I was usually using a lot of After Effects. I was using a lot of, what is the program? I was using Photoshop, and I was using... Canva was a really big one for me. It allowed me to do some very quick edits, you know, like they're like, yo, we need something in the next like few hours. And I'm like, few hours? Oh God. So Canva was my saving grace. And I believe I was also using, not Paint Tool SAI, which was it? I was also using Clip Studio Paint for a lot of like my drawing and art. That was like one of my best programs to use. And also you only got to buy it once. It's not a subscription. So that was very nice for that. But yeah, I would say those were the main programs that I used. So a lot of like Adobe products at the time, and then some other drawing resources.
The role that you took back then, is it something that aligned with the thing that you learn from college, or this is something that you need to learn from zero because you haven't learned it before?
Yeah, definitely. So I had classes in like special After Effects and such, and then like I had my basic illustration classes and then advanced illustration classes. So it's skills that I already had learned in college. Of course, naturally, you never stop learning. So there was always things that I still had to teach myself along the way of like, oh, how do I do this effect? I didn't learn this one in college. But, you know, those were more advanced things. So, yeah, definitely it's a both type of situation where I had learned like the core essentials, but always got to keep moving forward and learning more.
I see. So you built like your skills around the animation, the motion, the art and illustration, something like that. And then you mentioned that you also did the writing, the narrative, something like that. This is something that you didn't learn, right, in college, right? How do you learn that skill? Or did you learn it back then?
Yeah, so I did have like a few creative writing classes, but they were a little different from like what you normally see in game writing. So I did have to teach myself some of the basic core essentials for game writing. And I even based like my entire senior thesis about it by creating a visual novel with the you know, learnings and findings that I had. But I will say that they did give me some basic, you know, like creative writing studies and such from taking some classes. But when it came to the game writing aspect, like I definitely had to ask for assistance like outside of college, saying and hitting up people saying like, hey, you do narrative design, what are some in and outs or do's and don'ts that you know? Because I would love to learn from you. So yeah, definitely something that I had learned during college, but not necessarily in college.
I see. And I think also like writing in for animation in game, is it different or the same, like the process in writing a story for animation or a game?
They do have their similarities. There are absolutely similarities there, but there are some differences. in terms of how like scripts are written when it comes to maybe say if it's like an open adventure type of game or open world type game, it's not really going to compare to like a show series that has like a, you know, exactly what's going to happen back to back to back after every single last episode, or if it's like a movie script where the entire thing is laid out for you. So it can differentiate in those manners, especially with games, like, you know, when you make certain choices in certain games, like that may change the way the script now works, how the dialogue is then going to play out. So you have to learn how to branch and such. And that's a great, one of the beautiful things about narrative design when it comes to game writing is the many different ways that you can change the script up really just based off of like the smallest choice that you make. But you don't always see that in animation. So yeah, there are similarities, but definitely a lot of differences.
I see. So from this talk until now, we already talk about the role in more common, like some like the artist, the animation. This is, I think, most of the people, especially in Indonesia, already familiar. And then maybe writers or narrative designer is something that not quite common yet, but the skills that you learn in animation school or film school, you can maybe use that to creating story or narrative for games, right? Now, we're going to talk something that I think not very common in Indonesia, the role that you also discover later on, right? The community manager. Can you explain the moment that you realized that, oh, this is new roles, a community manager's a career, and what do you do as a community manager?
Yeah, so as a community manager, I do a plethora of things. It's definitely a role of wearing many hats. But you can see us doing things from like running social media and doing social media campaigns. It'll be us running streams like on Twitch or YouTube. It can be us managing Discords where, you know, it's like, say, if it's for a game and, you know, you have like playtester Discord, you can have a community Discord and things like that. It's maintaining those and creating those. And it can also be like event management, which is something that I've talked about before, where you're hosting events from like giveaways to tournaments and things along those lines. So it's definitely a lot of different things kind of meshed in one. But overall, the biggest thing with community management is really, again, maintaining and sustaining a community full of people who are here for the product or game that you are a part of. So it's a big people face forward community role where you are engaging with people on like a daily basis.
I see. In your experience, having a engaged community or like a great communication with the community, what impacts does it give to the games itself?
Yeah, so being able to have a great game, a great community behind a game that you're making is really showing how much like people will show up for the work that you do. If it's especially a game that people love and adore, and they see that there are great people behind it, that's one of the most beautiful things, because as a community manager, like you're speaking essentially for the entire team and showing off like, this is how I am. Like, if this is how you see me, think about the rest of the people. Like, they're all just as great as me. And that really gets people invested. People love that level of transparency or just like openness or honesty of seeing that, like, you know, like, yeah, like these people are really, really cool. I think one of the best examples that I can give immediately is like Victoria Tran, who's the community manager for Among Us. And the folks love Among Us. They love the hilarity of it. They love the community built around it. And all of that was really built or helped be sustained by Victoria, who already is that person who's very bubbly, very open, loves to throw in like jokes here and there. And people like that because they see that, yeah, this is a person. And while there are limits of, you know, like not getting like too, you know, like personal, as again, at the end of the day, it's also a job, it still shows that these are some great people. She helps put out that information all the time to being, you know, like, here's some new player information, here's like the team information and all that good stuff. So it's definitely a role that it can get very tiresome, but there's it exists for a reason, because the engineers and the artists, like, they're too busy, you know, like, they're busy programming and they're busy doing the art and everything else like that. They don't have time to go and answer all the questions for every player that's out there, or take the time to, like, look through everything. That's what the community managers do. We take those time to answer all those questions. We take the time to be there and just be like, whoa, that looks great, and engage and make sure that, hey, we do care and we do want to actually hear what you have to say. So that's one of the beautiful things about it is, you know, being there for the people. Like, we are the bridge between the players and the developers, essentially.
I see. Talking about bridge, like, not every, maybe, like, not every interaction is positive, right? Sometimes there is an angry gamers, users, something like that. How do you give that message to the developers? I mean, do you, like, sugarcoating, or, like, do you tell, like, there's a lot of people, like, how do you manage to deliver the message from the users to the engineers?
Yeah, so if it's something that's a little bit more on the heated side, I tend to always try to make a productive conversation with those people, unless it's just, you know, like, things that are very hateful or clearly, like, trolly, like, these are people that there's no reasoning with them. Like, with those, I tend to push those to a side, because not only is it not productive or helpful in any kind of way, it's like they're just looking for a reaction at that point. I tend to heed those no mind. But when it comes to people who I know for a fact are having, like, genuine concerns and genuine frustrations, I like to have a conversation with them, and then I like to take the bullet point notes, like, the, what are, like, some of the core vital parts from this conversation that I should bring up to my team. And then with that, I do not sugarcoat it. I let them note it straight up, like, what it is, what the issue is, whenever we have, like, another, like, team sync, and I say, hey, these are some issues that came up, and I think that we should look at them, especially if it's something that's repetitive. If you get, like, repetitive notes from players saying almost the exact same thing, then that immediately is going to be brought up as a high priority, because now it's showing that players are unsatisfied, they're unhappy. And when you have unhappy and unsatisfied players, meaning that you're now starting to lose people who are supporting your game, and then also spreading around, like, hey, these negative things are happening with so-and-so game, I wouldn't really check them out. You don't want that. Being able to actually pay attention and listen and tell the developers, the people behind making the game, what's going on is extremely crucial and important. Player feedback is one of the most vital things when it comes to making a game. Because, again, without the players, what's the point of having your game, you know? So it's really, really important to make sure that you are taking all forms of feedback, negative or positive, and seeing how it can just continue to help better and push yourself in your games.
I see. Agree with you. That's quite important, right? By the way, when you talk with the users or the player, did you come as yourself, like a cell, like, as a person, or like as a admin in, like, some Twitter account or something like that?
Yeah, it definitely really depends on the rules for each, like, studio or company. Some of them will want you to just be perceived as, like, an admin, like, some, so that kind of for, I guess, privacy sake, like, they will do that as far as, like, just an admin. But if you are specifically listed as a community manager, and that's, like, public information, then you will go as just yourself. I personally like to just go as just myself. I feel like it's a bit more humane. I feel like it allows bigger and better connections with people. It allows more transparency. So I personally like to have the rule of go and be yourself. It also allows for a certain level of accountability as well.
I see. Is it something that, in your experience, like, disturbing, like, your privacy, like, people keep contacting you because, I don't know, maybe there's some issue, some problem, and they keep DMing you and something like that? Did you face something like that, or, like, that's not happening?
So that was something that did kind of happen to me a little bit in the beginning, but then I immediately kind of set that boundary with the community, which they all lovingly respected, which was, hey, I work Monday through Friday. Those are my days. Saturday, Sunday, those are my recharge days, so I can come back to you guys full of energy. And everyone has been fully accepting of that, which is amazing. There are still times where people will, like, DM me with a question, but then they will still understand and realize that, hey, it's the weekend. Cell is not going to respond to me right now, but I'm sending this message right now. And, like, they'll even say it, like, hey, Cell, don't answer this message until Monday. But I have a question that I don't want to forget to ask you. So there will be those moments where it happens, but it is still common regardless. Like, from anyone who is in the community manager, just like social presence type role, where people will sometimes try to cross those boundaries of like constantly DMing you, messaging you over social media, emailing you, even saying like, hey, or whatever, like I'll ask their questions. And sometimes they'll get heated of like, why aren't you responding to me in less than like 2 hours? I don't understand. And it's like, why are you sitting here looking at your email for a whole 2 hours waiting for me to respond? Calm down. I'll get to you when I can get to you. You're not the only person out there that exists. But also, again, it's also very much on the community manager or again, social presence forward person to set that boundary with themselves and really unplug and look away. I have a strict rule that, you know, like when it's my days off, I do not check my email. I do not look at those like work DMs because I'm the kind of person that when I see it, I'm like, oh, I might as well answer it because I'm right here. No, I got to set those boundaries or that will allow other people to cross my boundaries. So by being able to set that apart from others, like, you know, like me time and work time, it's worked tremendously. And again, it can really, really be seen in the community that if you show and prove that they will also start to respect it. And again, you will have those few people here and there who think that they're very entitled to you like responding to them almost immediately. But I tend to ignore them versus like the many, many other people who do respect it.
Wow, that's really important insight for any of the listeners or the one who watched this episode who wants to be a community manager. You need to set boundaries, right? Because you need to recharge. You need to fully refresh to be able to answer the question later on. Yeah, I think that's important. Nice, nice. A little bit technical question regarding building the community. In your opinion, when is the right time for a game or a studio to start building or engaging the community? Is it like near the time when they're going to release the game, after they release the game, or in the start of development, they already built the community? When usually the community management start?
Ah, that's a great question. For me, I would say the moment that you have something to show off, that is now a great time to start building a community. So that can be whether you're ready to start building like your Kickstarter, if it's when you officially have your very first demo. It can even just be like screenshots from within the game. It is always a good time to start as soon as you can, because the sooner you start, then you allow people to see and watch your progress. It allows more people to get invested and it allows them to just be like, wow, like I want to watch and see this grow and then play it when it officially comes out. So 100%, like as soon as you can, as soon as you have those kinds of assets to share with the world is when you should start building your community. And that can start as simple as, you know, starting it off with friends and showing like people who are close to you and then telling those friends to share with those friends. Or it could be sharing on social media. And then, you know, if you see like, you know, like a screenshot Saturdays and like tagging it like that on social media, or even finding those kind of game developer threads of saying like, hey, are you a little small game studio? Shout yourself out in the replies. Do that. Take advantage of those. You never know who's looking or who's watching. And they're a great, great way to get yourself connected with other people. So absolutely, start from the beginning. Start from the beginning.
Start from the beginning. Even before the demo, like just the screenshot, you can share, right? And between the time that you share the screenshot until the first demo or maybe like something playable, right? How do you engage with them? I mean, like, do you invite them to, I don't know, a group or Discord or something like that? Or like the communication happen like in the Twitter or something like that?
Yeah, so usually the communication tends to stay on social media. It can be like on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok even. And usually what I tend to do is that I will continue to kind of share like some behind the scenes stuff. Nothing that's too much of like a spoiler or like fully giving away of what we're doing. Just like little small things that'll keep people engaged and then questioning and asking for more. Because you can recycle a lot of that content. And then it's usually no Discord up until there's at least like some sort of demo for people to play. So around that time, like once there's like a small demo, even if it's like a really short 5 minute one, once that first play testing demo is out, is when we pull in the Discord, because usually people who are coming in and people who are play testing said demo. And then afterwards it just continues to grow and build from there.
I see. That's really interesting. Usually, like, how often do you like tweet, or we need to do it every day or once in a week, or do you have like some kind of magic number to keep the community engaged and didn't forget your game?
Yeah. So I am a person who, even though it seems I'm very social forward, I'm not. Half of the tweets that you may see, like even on my private accounts, are all to actually scheduled tweets. I'm a kind of person that I don't hop on every single week of like, oh, I gotta think of new things for this week. I don't know what to do. Nope. I take one day and I will schedule out tweets for an entire month. Or even more than that at times, because I feel like being able to have that level of being able to detach away from social media, but then also making sure it's still active, is extremely important. Because no one can sit on social media every single day, all the time. Now, granted, I still always allow myself like the time to be on maybe like 1 or 2 hours, because people will be liking things, they'll be retweeting things, they'll be commenting on things. And I want to take that time to be genuine and, you know, respond to everyone accordingly, or, you know, like things that people tag us in, or even retweet those things that people tag us in, or repost them. Because a lot of the tweets and a lot of the creativity that goes into making a social media post can be extremely draining, extremely, extremely draining. Yeah. Like, you'll be sitting there looking over a tweet for about 30 minutes or so, just like, does this look right? I don't know if this looks right or not. So instead of doing that every single week, I kind of make that a once a month or a bi-weekly thing instead, where I'll just schedule them out. It'll be probably around like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday kind of tweet, or like, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday types of tweets, and then just let them go out as they go out. And I think that for anyone who, especially people who are using social media all the time, it is so good to use. There are so many tools for you to do that. There are some social media platforms that already have a scheduling feature ingrained. Sometimes you may have to use a third party, but if you can find one that works well for you, use it. Because again, being online all the time is not that healthy. And you really, especially if you're the kind of person that talks to people every single day, all the time, you are going to want to have those times to step away. So yeah, not like a once a week I'm making new tweets. It's just like, nope, I did all those tweets the beginning of July. Like, I did those way in advance, and now I'm about to do it again because now it's getting towards the end of the month.
Wow, that's smart. Yes, I think this is something that every studios can try to do, right? To keep the social media active without taking too much time of their time, right? Wow, that's quite great. Do you create every content by yourself, or do you have like in the team someone who create the copyright, the image, the graphic, and all that?
Yeah, usually. So it really is dependent on what studio I'm working with. Sometimes I'm making all the content by myself, and then sometimes like I'll have a creative team who's making the content for me, and it's really just my job to think of like the captions and stuff and to post it. So it's super dependent on where I am. But it's also really dependent on what it's for. Like, if it's something that's like last minute or something along those lines, I'll tend to usually do it because I don't like to give the creative team last minute work to do. I do not like crunching at all. And then if it's something that has been way in advance of like, oh, like I want to put out this tweet in like a few weeks, could you get me this thing done by this amount of time? And that's usually when I reach out to the creative team. But yeah, usually I tend to enjoy joint efforts. I think one of the best examples was brainstorming and working with like someone who was a TikTok specialist, and they created the TikToks and all that, but I helped them out with scripts, and I helped them, you know, like when it came to having different topics and such for the TikToks. So yeah.
Why, interesting. Mentioning about TikTok, there's a lot of social media right now, right? There's TikTok, there's Instagram, Facebook, and everything. Do you think, as a community manager, you need to be active in all of them, or different kind of game has different kind of community in different social media? On in your observation, what the best way to communicate in different social media?
Yeah, so I would say don't be afraid to kind of dip your toes into different platforms, but definitely figure out like which ones are the main ones that work for you. So I know there are a lot of people who start off with like every single like social media platform they can find. And then afterwards, once they see like, you know, like, oh, we're not getting as much activity on this one or this one or this one, we'll just focus on like these two or three. Because you never know like where you're going to find that exact community where you're going to find your niche. Like some studios have found their niches on Tumblr. Some places have found their niches on TikTok. Some are mainly on Twitter and some are probably on Instagram because it's probably very photogenic. So it's one where I believe that, yeah, you can start off with many, but if you do, then you have to, again, very much limit yourself on how much time you spend on each, as that can be extremely draining and exhausting. But when you do find those ones, make sure that are working really well for you in your studio, keep those ones active, keep them up to date. And then maybe here and there, if you remember, like, oh, yeah, that's right, we have a Tumblr. Let's update it with some stuff. And you can just put a little bit out there just to keep that a little active. But for those that are really, really dead, it's okay if you let them go. You do not have to be on every single social media platform. Word gets around. If you're not talking about yourself there, someone else will. Especially if you are building the community in a way that allows people for you to talk about you guys. So, yeah.
Even Tumblr? Wow, that's interesting. Wow. What the case, like, do you know like the titles of the community that's really active in Tumblr?
Ooh, yeah. So I say that some of the communities that are really active on Tumblr are like the Danganronpa community is super active there still. I would say that the Animal Crossing community is still very active there. And a bunch of others. There are like a few like maybe niche indie games that are also very active. If it's a community that you're a part of and you start following blogs that are, you know, talking about those particular games, like you'll find them. You'll absolutely find them.
Ah, wow, that's really interesting. I think, yeah, you can try a lot of social media, right, to experiment at first, see where's your market is, where your niche, and then you can focus more energy on that one. Yeah. So to make it more efficient for you. Do you find, like, sometimes, like, this community that you manage, right, you gather them, you talk with them about the game and everything, but sometimes... Like in Animal Crossing, there is also some organic community happen, right? Someone in the like in some circles, they're talking about the game. When you look at the thing like that, do you engage with them and then you, give them spotlight something, or you let them be as organic as possible?
Yeah, so when I see like a naturally like developing community, like here and there, like we will engage with them because those are people who genuinely just really love the game without us having to like wrestle them in. Like they just happened to find us and they started building community around us, and that's so beautiful because that shows they have a certain point of care and love for the game. Like it brings them some sort of joy and happiness. And that's definitely something that you kind of want to spotlight. So here and there, I know that other community managers or again, social facing forward people, they'll reach out to like maybe a few people in those communities and be like, hey, I saw that you drew fan art and we really, really love it. Like, is it okay if like we repost it or we share it? Or they'll hop into the community, say if it's like a Reddit community of like, yo, have you guys heard about this game? It's really cool. Like then the community manager who probably saw that or social media person who saw that will also hop into the conversation like, hey, I'm like the CM for this and all this other kind of things. Like, here's actually our Discord if you guys are interested. And then people will like, hop in and join in. So it's so great to engage with those people because usually they're some of the best ones as they are, again, just genuinely loving and enjoying the game. So I love reaching out, but at the same time, also just letting them continue to do their own thing as long as it's not, you know, being harmful to anyone in any kind of way. But yeah.
Wow, that's really interesting. Do you have like the most wholesome or memorable moment or interaction interacting with the community in some of your titles that you work on?
Yeah, definitely. So there was one interaction where someone had joined one of the game studio discords that I work for. They joined the Discord and they had just only recently heard about the game and they were just like so thrilled and they just wanted to keep talking to me and asking questions to me and the developers about the game. And they got so excited and just like so happy that they were like, I want to draw fan art. And they drew it and they were like, I drew fan art. but I'm nervous to share it. And then like people in the community were just like, no, don't be nervous. Like, we'd love to see it. Like, we want to see your work. And before that was before I even like, you know, had woken up. Like, this is very late at night. And everyone's just like encouraging them and just saying like, no, share. Like, I know the developers are going to love it. Like, they don't care about like the quality. They care about like how much like love you put into it and all that. And then they posted it. And then like all these people just started cheering them on. And then they're saying like, oh, that's awesome. That's amazing. It's so good. And like giving it all of these like heart emojis and like love reactions and such. And it was so cute and so wholesome. When I woke up the next morning and I saw it, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so cute. And then even after I came in and I said, whoa, this is amazing. They're like, whoa, I got recognized by one of the devs. So thank you. So I would say that things wow. like that, it was so wholesome. Just seeing how the community uplifted each other during the times of someone's doubt. And it was just so beautiful to me because it really showed and proved that these are the kind of people that we're pulling in and the kind of community that we're building. And it just made me feel really proud to know that this is a product of the work that we've done. And that makes me happy to know that this is something that we'll continue to do.
Wow, that's really inspiring. I think this kind of moments that make you like woke up in the morning and then feel happy and then do this thing every day. Right. We already talked about the thing that you do, like usually like in the managing the community in the social media, in Discord and something like that. Do you also interact with them on offline, like in events, something like that, or everything going in online?
I would say that usually it is mostly online. If we have like a business situation that happens in person, like say if we're at like a convention or at some kind of like a panel and such like that, those would be times that I would interact in person. But usually I still like to try to have those levels of separation because I really try to avoid having parasocial relationships or energies with people of like, you know, who you know me as is mostly is like my work persona. And while that's very real, you also don't know me, like the real me outside of work. Like I how I would talk and such during like my working hours can differentiate a little bit when I'm just talking with my friends about things, you know? I like to have those boundaries set with people of like, you know, like, hey, like if you see like, you know, you see me in the streets or if you see me at an event, if you see me at an event, you know, like there I'm working. You know, like I'm there as my persona, especially if I'm there with my studio, you know, that is me when I'm, you know, in the work zone. But if I'm just like, you know, I'm in the streets and I'm just like out grocery shopping, that is not the time for you to be asking me games, questions and things like that. I'm clearly on my off time. Yeah. It has happened to me once before.
Oh, really?
Who recognized my face. They're like, oh my gosh, you're Stella. And I was like, hi, hello. Like, nice to meet you. They're like, oh, like, is it okay if like, I ask you a question? I was like, now is not the right time. I am kind of out food shopping right now with my partner. However, if you want to like toss me your question on social media or even on Discord, you're absolutely free to.
interesting. Wow. But do you think like in convention event, like maybe some event like PAX or something like that, there's like, how do you engage with them? I mean, like, do they usually like the user that already know the game and come to your booth and then asking a question, or do you engage with people who didn't know the game and then you talk with them usually? How is the interaction in the offline event?
Yeah, so usually it'll be a booth that's already there, or even a panel. So sometimes people will engage with me like via panels that's being hosted by the convention. Or again, if it's a booth, like I'm usually sitting at the booth and people are just like walking by and then they'll come by up and talk to us because they're familiar with the game, or maybe they're not familiar with the game. They'll be like, never heard about this before. What's this? Can you tell me about it? And then that's when, you know, I get to give the really good like pitch sale type of thing. Yeah. So that's usually one of the best ways to go about it. Or if I let people know ahead of time on social media, like, hey, I want to be at this event. Come talk with me. Come learn about this. And if you find me, maybe I'll have a freebie. I don't know. Things like that are usually how those offline events tend to work.
I see. do you think it's important to have an offline presence, or maybe like it's not that impactful? You can also build your community online without having offline presence.
Yeah, I'd say it's like a half and half. It really depends on how you are as a person, as an individual. So there are some people who are just like, I need to have like those offline events. Like I need to be able to see people and physically make those connections, which are very special when you can do things in person. But there are some people who enjoy just working primarily online. There are some communities for me that are just strictly online at the time, and that's totally okay. And they still thrive and they're very successful. I don't think that you necessarily need to have offline events or in-person events just to find success or to grow a community. But I do think that they allow you to create a very special bond with the players and the people that you meet when you do have them.
I see. Because like maybe in some part of the world, like maybe in our country, in Indonesia, to be able to fly to PAX, it's quite expensive, right? To build the community, maybe the player mostly in US, but they're in the other side of the world. Is it okay for them just to bring the community online, or like, do you think at some point you need to engage them in an offline event?
Yeah, I think keeping it online for me is crucial and essential even, as it allows for accessibility. So like you just said, like, you know, like say if like you're like in Asia and a little bit majority of your fan base is in like North America, like that right there, it shows and proves that having those online presences are so important. And again, it allows accessibility, because even if you are not someone that's in a completely different continent, like, but say maybe you're disabled and you have a disability that will allow you to go to those events in person and things like that, but you love so much like being able to interact and talk with this community, having it online allows anyone from anywhere to engage with you as long as they have internet access. So yeah, while offline is great, online is a big essential.
I see. Wow, amazing. So we learned a lot on this session, and we have almost an hour already talking about everything. Wow, this is so fun. It's not so nice talking to you, and there's a lot of questions that we want to learn from you, but I think the time is almost over. So this is just the last question for everyone. So for every listener that wants to jump into the game industry and they get inspired by your story and wants to be a community manager, do you have any tips for them, like what should they do to start to be a good community manager?
Yeah, definitely. One of the first things I will always say is ask for help. If you don't know how to start, or if you don't know where to start it with, don't be afraid to reach out to some of your favorite community managers or people that you see doing community management, reaching out and asking for help, or just asking for tips and tricks. It's honestly something that makes a lot of our days. Not everyone, but a good amount of us are always willing to give you some of our in and outs and do's and don'ts. And that's a very important thing, is asking for assistance here and there. I would also say, again, to remember your personal capacity for being able to take on this kind of work. Again, it can be an extremely draining task from talking, working with people almost every single day. Even if you're not doing it in person, online, it can be just as exhausting. So know your personal strengths and set those boundaries for when you can and can't be on and off as a community manager. And then I would say my last one is remember to take care of yourself, as it is a very, very big task to make sure that while you are being up and bubbly and happy all the time for everyone else, you need to be able to make sure that you can do the same for yourself. And by doing so, you got to take care of yourself. So that means eating good diet, you know, exercising, going out, and again, logging out for a little while. Take that time to step away from your computer, because you can absolutely have hours go by without you even realizing it. You're like, yeah, I was talking with these players and I started at 11 o'clock in the morning and now it's 5 p.m. at night. I should probably step away for a little while, and you should. So absolutely find those times to take care of you and do you, so that way you continue to doing your best job possible.
Wow, so inspiring. Ask for help, set up a boundaries, and take care of yourself. I think that's three powerful things that every listeners of this podcast need to take notes if you are inspired by Cell and want to be a community manager in the game industry. Thank you so much, Cell, for all of your insight and your experience. I think that's really, really helpful to all the listeners. And that's it for I hope the session can give all of you insight and courage to press start your career in the game industry. I'm Adam Adismita. Keep playing games and start making games. Thank you, Cell. Bye-bye.
Bye.